Unless they're very careful. And if they fail to take this care, then they must be responsible for the issue that takes place. Just as you're responsible for the words that come out of your mouth, so are you responsible for the life forces that move through your body. You're not standing as something irresponsible, you see. You cannot say, well, I can always take care of this through killing it. You see, it is not something that is so easily done. So my question always is, as in all things, the end is in the beginning. And if you understand this deeply, as a very deep spiritual understanding, then before you begin things, you will be very deeply aware of the end that might result, and therefore you are very careful. And you take care in the beginning so that the end will not contain in it a seed of destruction. You see, if it's as in your words, in the beginning, and they are out, and then the destruction arises, well, you cannot say that the end, the destruction, is somehow not connected with the beginning. If the feelings that generated the first speech were destructive, then the end is going to be. If the actions in sexual relationships are casual and unthinking and uncaring and not motivated by the deepest desires, then so will the end. You see, in the beginning is the end. So one has to be responsible all the way through, not in some kind of heavy-handed, despondent perception, but deeply aware that all of this must be taken as an important moment in one's life. And that if the desire is simply for physical pleasure to be released, then is this a responsible act then? Is it responsible? And do you stand as responsible human beings for what happens? But once again, there are always certain cases that it is absolutely necessary. This is understood. You know, when women are of a certain age, it is no longer healthy that they have children, the children and so on. All of this is all very true. Certain formations within the physical being of the child mean that it will be a very definite physical difficulty. No, should these happen. There are always cases in very young girls, so on. You know, there are exceptions. And in those cases, the reason rides clear and strong and says this should be the normal action. That is not my point. My point is, and I think this is the thrust of the question, the abortion movement within the world today is such that it is so vast and sweeping that it is just another sign of lack of responsibility of one's actions. The only thing that matters is your physical pleasure. What results from it does not matter. I would ask you to give serious thought to this. Is this a very responsible way to live your life? Or is it simply another sign of one's desire to fulfill their immediate needs and not be concerned about the outcome? So this is all I would like to say on it. There is no black and white. There is no absolute no and absolute yes. There are gray areas, and it is, again, no rule of virtue can rule here. It has to come in the beginning every time you enter into your sexual relationship. What is there? What is the responsibility? What are you calling up? What are you doing it for? And if you're doing it for the physical pleasure, then be very sure that you are taking precautions so that you will not bring an unwanted child into your womb and therefore have this responsibility to deal with it. Be responsible before, not partway through. No, it's the one act that you have to be responsible at the beginning, or else you will have a tremendous amount of responsibility, either in years and years to come in raising the child, or in the time of having to make the decisions of adoption or abortion or whatever.
Again, it's not what you do so much as how you do it, what your attitude is.
In the totality, in the beginning, you see so many people, remember I've spoken before about the somnambulistic approach people have to their desires. You know, they have a sexual desire, they decide they have this one that they're going to have this relationship with, and they throw themselves into it, and it is the immediacy of the thing that permeates their mind structure, nothing else. Right now, I want this person, physically, and I shall have it. The next step is not taken. What is the motive in that moment? If the motive is purely sensual, I'm not against purely sensual motives. I'm not against anything. But I say, are you aware of that? Are you aware that this is what is going on? And if you are, then please make sure that you're taking precautions to make sure that that is all that you're going to be resulting of. Do you understand? It's a matter of where are your awareness perceptions at that moment. And if you don't mind just having a physical relationship with no encumbrances, I don't mind. This is not my business. I'm simply saying, I think that humans have to pull back and be responsible in the moment of their overwhelming desires. It's very easy for an alcoholic, for example, who gets in a car and goes down and destroys a life. He says, well, I didn't mean to hit the car. I didn't mean to hit that person. I didn't mean it. But you see, if they had been paying attention, they would have realized at the beginning of that day, when they began their drinking pattern, when they began to imbibe or take the drug or whatever it was that they were doing, if they would have only gone a little past that and asked the responsibility that they were undertaking before they got into the vehicles and moved down the highway, there's always that option of disaster. Everyone knows that, but people abandon. Remember I've spoken before, they abandon the field because they don't want to think about that. They just want to have their central desire satisfied, whatever that might be. So yes, it's the motive, and it's the motive in the beginning. This is so difficult because humans do not like to be aware of this very basic fact. In the beginning is the end. In the beginning is the end. And if you can once understand that, what I mean, so totally, then you will understand why I keep pleading for awareness in the moment. Because in each moment, there is an ending already coming into its own. And you, as you begin one thing, are moving very definitely into a future point. You are. It is simply where your awareness is. And therefore, those people who try to safeguard the future, the best safeguard for the future is total awareness in the present. If you're totally aware in the present, being aware of your motives, casting out that which you don't really want as an end result, and staying very close closely with those things that you do, what you will find is that your life takes on a different hue because you're not futurely oriented. You're living now for the most maximum awareness in the moment, and the future takes care of itself. You see? You understand? The future takes care of itself in its own way. You don't worry about the future. You just stay quietly, centered, and totally aware in the present. And the future will take care of itself. What is the motive in this moment? What is it? I'm not against sensual relief. I'm not against sexual relationships. Not against any of those things. But I am totally against going through them all asleep. Because then you will not be there. Then you will not have the perception that makes maximum your future, because it's here. This is where you make your future maximum, right here. No other time. And it will be maximum if you can hold to the center and go with the deep awareness that unfolds minute by minute within your own being. And the future is taken care of.
This is connected with your statement that never use its source.
Exactly. Exactly. It must be this. And if you are not responsible in the beginning, irresponsibility and actions of irresponsible nature are the result. It has to be thus. You cannot act irresponsibly and have responsibility be the result. As you give, so you receive. What you give out is what returns. Where your awareness stands, that is what returns. And if it's a disparate energy moving here and there with this desire and that desire and so on, we end in the same confusion.
Is there a principle that if one is not paying attention to the situation at its outset and continues to be somnambulistic about a course of action, that the phenomenon becomes stronger and stronger and more apparent and more apparent and more apparent until at last one must pay attention to it? Is that some kind of a principle?
Well, the old story, you know, they hit you with a stick and then a 2x4 and then they let the house fall on you. Yes, this is your higher self and not some demonic power outside of your own awareness pushing you into various things. Understand this. No one takes physical life without part of their higher self doing its maximum to bring you to whatever maximum. It is not so, but there is this need, this incredible need. You hear someone saying, well, I'm not like my parents, with great disdain, meaning that they have divorced themselves entirely from that part of their own awareness that is connected with their parental problems, and they have divorced themselves from it, says, no, I'm not any part of that. I have nothing to do with that. Now, if there's something beautiful about their parents, they will say, oh, yes, well, I share in that. You see, this wonderful selectivity that goes on in the human. without seeing that underneath it, it's all the same. The motives are the same, and they are very limited. Hydra-headed monsters arise from very simple beginnings. And this is all that the world is. It starts from a very simple motive. And the motive is the desire to be unique, to be separate, to be special, to be somehow different. And you will even revel in being diabolically unique is better than to being mediocre the same. You see, this very strange perception that happens in the human. And therefore, I find that they do disapprove when I say it's all very simple. But you are right. It is all very simple. And the motives are few. And if you stay, you see, you could not have asked that question had you not been perceiving your own motives. And if you do perceive them carefully, you will see with nauseous repetition the same head coming up. The same arises. If you give it a cursory view, then you might be able to say, well, it is a little different. But if you are very deeply involved in watching your own motives, you will see it again and again arise in every different situation, but carefully perceive it comes from the same source over and over. And what is it? What is it that you are trying to do? What manipulation are you trying to achieve? What is the end view of all that you do? What is it? And when you finally see it over and over and over until you can no longer pretend that it's different, then so much of the glamour of that begins to fall away. And you say, how boring.
The chief motive then is to be separate, and yet when we succeed in being separate, then we're failing, are we not?
All right, and that I think will clarify it for them. If I may repeat, so that they will be sure, that what you are saying, what is absolutely true, is that there is no permanence in any of the things that you observe. Unfortunately, I think I would love to observe it as gorgeous. We could leave it. So. If you could move a little over here. But another thing that I think would end up being a statement of how boring is when you have come into the life and decided, perhaps you better, when you decide that you come into the life that you are going to enjoy your separateness, this is going to be an enjoyable experience. You see, this is the premise upon which you incarnate as a separate entity. I am going to enjoy this. I will. It's almost as if you're hanging tenaciously. I will enjoy it. I will. And you incarnate. And then you find, are you enjoying it? Over and over again, you try the separateness, and then it doesn't work. And then the question is, have I enjoyed this? Has this been an uplifting, enjoyable, wondrous experience or not? And if you can stay with the now experience of, have I enjoyed it, you will find that you have not reached all that you hoped for. I'm not saying that parts of your life are not enjoyable. It's foolish. Of course they are. But the question is, as you have pointed out, is it a permanent feeling, or does it just dissipate quickly into another anxiety or another desire or another boredom or whatever? If one can only stay with this. But you see, the human says, well, it didn't work this time, but it'll work next. This time, I lost it. This time, it was not maximum. But that's all right. I will find something bigger, something better. This woman is not doing it for me anymore. I will find another one. This job isn't so good. I'll get another one. Well, I don't really care about this. I'll get something else.
If we could love all, or even a great number of people, with the same intensity that we can love a certain selected person or two, this would be too much for the little I, for the ego, would it not?
Well, all right, the highest reflection that you can have without experiencing the vastness of total love is that which you can feel at certain times in relationships to certain people. But even then, my friend, if you're paying close attention, that is a coming and going phenomenon. At some times you feel very caught up in an emotional feeling towards someone, and that same person in the next minute can enrage you so much that you can have the opposite feeling, which is, how did this person ever get into my life? Now, those of you who have relationships and do not face up to this are being foolish. And I can hear some of them saying, I have never had such a thought. Well, I would say, nonsense. You're just very good at covering up. One of the problems with the human condition is, as long as it's as long as it is a one-to-one situation, if you are paying close attention again, if the I is doing the loving, the small I, then it is an off and on phenomenon. It must be so. It is the closest reflection of the real. So, if I might respond to what you're saying, as long as the I is doing the loving in the small sense, then really we can say that that's all that's happening. It is an off and on phenomenon. It touches, perhaps in some moments, the hem of the garment of the real thing. But it is such a pale replica that we can't even really speak about it. But what really happens when you really move into true love, it is not love moving through you anymore. It is you who are in the presence of love. It is a totally different feeling. Instead of having it move through you, somehow you are immersed in it. It is the vastness, if I may put it that way. And you are the simple particle afloat and awash and totally one and so happily at one with it, and you have lost your boundaries. You see, as long as it moves through you, then it is the you, in this sense, who controls this action, if I may say it. But when this complete turnabout takes place, your whole perception turns about too. And what happens is that the vastness is the love, and somehow this tiny speck of your selfness is awash in this great sea, and is so delighted to be at wash in the sea. And the sea then moves, and you go with it as a part of it. Do you see the difference in imagery? I don't mean to harp on such a small point, but I think it's important for people to understand that it's a difference of totally upside down thinking in the physical world that gets itself turned on its head when real awareness takes place. And this is why wherever you might go, that sea of awareness of love is there, and you are awash in it. And if it happens to wash against this vehicle, then that also is a part of the wash. And that one, and that one, and it is no longer, this is why it is no longer yourself that is there. It is this wonderful sea. And you simply are a bobbing bubble about in it, now forming down into the depths of it, now going here, now going there, but constantly being awash. And this is the difficulty, because you see, at that point, you are absolutely incapable of choice. There is no choice. If, my friend, we will postulate that the sea is what moves, and you simply move in it and with it, then the sea takes you. And then where is your individual desire? There isn't any. And if there was any, the tremendous thundering of the sea would drown it out. And this is your hope. This is what you're hoping for, is that the thunder of the sea will so drown it out that you can't hear it anymore. Do you see? If we would speak of two voices, what we're really asking for is that there be two voices blending into one, and the roar of the divine sea be so great in your ears that it takes away that small voice of your own individualized ego. You see, now it is the opposite, is it not? It is your own ego that screams and yells and shatters your eardrum, and the other that is so quiet. And this is the reverse that begins to take place. And the more you go within and listen, the more the reverse happens, and then it turns on its axis, and then everything moves. And then the reverse process. But you see, you, sir, have spoken so much about this feeling of knowing that when it does happen, there will be no choice, sir. Mm-hmm. You know, that you will just be choiceless, that you might say, well, I should be doing this, but so you cannot, because the sea has said no, and takes you. And it is just like the leaf has no choice. You throw a leaf into the ocean. Does the leaf have a choice as to where it will go? Its destiny is sea. Now rain. And this is what it's all about. And when you understand that, when they say that you could not hold the power of that much love, what you're saying is that as long as you have that limitation of individualized self, it could not happen, and it could not happen. It could not happen. Yes, it could not happen, and you're absolutely right. But it's only when the reverse happens, and then it is the sea that is all-encompassing in your vision, and the small little particle of self that you have spent all of your lifetime paying such close attention to is now just there, and it's unimportant. Then you know you're beginning. Then you are really beginning to understand. And then the sea moves, and you go where it goes. And then you participate in that event. But it is no longer you in any way. It is just an event that you are now participating in. Let us put it this way. It's as if there is a piece of timber in the sea, and you are hanging on to that piece of timber, and with your feet are pushing against the sea and guiding the piece of timber hither and thither, and you say, oh, look, look how wonderful. Look what I'm doing. I'm controlling this. Isn't this wonderful? I'm going to go here, and I'm going to go there. What you're not seeing is that the benevolence of the sea says, all right, my dear, and pushes you in that direction since it senses your deep will. Go on, my child, and experience this. And then you say, oh, no, this island is not for me. I need to go on to the next island. And so you leap back in and grab upon your log and putter, putter, and you go in another. And the benevolent, all-abiding sea says, all right, my child, and pushes you along in that direction. Always understanding that the more of these experiences you can undergo, perhaps someday will come the one that will say, enough, you see. And it is the sea that moves you. You have the illusion as you kick your little feet fluttering in the vastness that it is you who are propelling this tiny little craft. But one day when you abandon that piece of log and say, sea, take me, receive me to thy depths, and do with me as you will. As you will. Without any fragment of desire to hang on to any particle of that log, then it is done. That is surrender. That is surrender.
And the experiences will still go on.
Of course. But the perception is different. The perception is different. Instead of you being the focus of the universe is the focus, and you simply abide in it. You see, you, right now, you are the focuses of all of your little universes. Each one of you has your own little universe. And you think you control it, you think you do this and that, and to a certain extent, your reality is valid. Because it is your will that propels the divine love to allow. It is your will that allows. You say, I want, and the divine says, so be it. Do you really think that if the divine didn't want something, it could happen? There's only one thing the divine wants, which is your freedom. And the divine knows very well that the only way you'll be free is when you choose to be free. Until that time, you will cling tenaciously, and so be it. Cling on, and eventually, you will be tired. You will be weary. Your arms will weaken, and your legs will get tired, and you'll say, and then you let go, and the sea takes you in. And then where are you not? If you are part of that sea, where are you not? It isn't that you all of a sudden are going to be able to perceive every end of the universal one, like some kind of great broad giant with great big eyes. It isn't the reality. But in participating in that wondrousness of the oneness, and knowing that wherever you go, it is the oneness that propels. And you simply go with tremendous joy and tears rolling down your face of gratitude. Because now you're experiencing that which you could experience now, which is the total reality of the life force. We're speaking of life force. When we speak of life force to humans, they tend to think of body. They say body force. It isn't body force I'm speaking of. I'm speaking of life force, which is awash everywhere, and which happens to also impinge through your body. But there's so much else other than that.
The life force being the what we call the higher self.
Exactly, which is all a part of the sea, if we may use that analogy. It is as if you were always awash in the sea, but clinging tenaciously. And when you let go, you're still a part of it. You always have been. You were still there. It wasn't that you were somehow not there, but it's you just were not aware that it was the sea that moved you. You thought it was you. You really felt that you were propelling that little log through the vastness of the sea. And it was not you at all. It was the tides of the sea that pushed and pulled and turned and moved you. They're not you at all. And all of these symbols are present within the world, but they're not perceived, because that isn't what you wish to see. Man wishes to see himself controlling the sea, controlling the tide, creating vehicles that will fly across the sea and over the sea and under the sea, and being, you know, in control, not dependent at all on the pull and the movement of the vast sea. You have to know, when you finally know within yourself and have the power to know that you can drop something and do so, then it is by choice. And I say again that God is a jealous lover. He doesn't want you under certain conditions. He doesn't want you under any condition at all. That is not the divine will. The divine sea doesn't wish to drag you down and drown you in its depth. It isn't an analogy. The analogy is that you let go and you say, take me. And you become one with willing joyfulness. That is the difference. If the divine chose, all of you could be made to stop whatever it is you're doing. This is, could be jolted and done. It's not possible. You see, again we go back. The divine wisdom is wise. The divine wisdom is wise. And since the separated ones have chosen, they can only go along with presenting them with enough possibilities to awaken to the fact that separated wisdom is not the highest form of joy for them. And until that time, they will continue to participate as separated beings, and so be it.
Just as how an enlightened one can be sitting right here, and supposedly an unenlightened one sitting here, and that they're both in the same room, they're both in the same location, yet one is free and one is not. They're both in the ocean, they're both moving the same way.
Exactly. But one has let go of the log, and the sea is taking him, and he has nothing but the joy and wonder of the movement of the sea and what it is, and its tasting of that. Its awareness is tasting of the bliss of the sea and the joy of being a part of that movement and just being part of the vastness and doing what it wills. Whereas the other's attention is totally on the log and on the hands and on the grasping and on the feet moving, and it's trying very hard, and it gets weary, and it rests, and then it has to rest, and then it gets alive again, and then it has to feed itself off the lichen on the log, and it goes on and on and on, always worried, always never enjoying, until maybe one day it looks up at the sky and allows itself a few moments of bliss looking at the sky and the beauty, and then, oh my, oh, I have something to do here, I have to get to that island. And then its feet move again, and it's paddling, and it's trying farther and farther and farther. More to do, more to do. They're going to the same place. They can end up in the same place, and it doesn't matter. The whole point is, how are you traveling? How are you traveling? The Maharshi says it very well. You get on a train. You put your baggage on the train, all right? Now, are you going to carry the baggage on your head as you sit on the train, or are you going to put it down and let the train take it? The baggage is going to get there either way. One, you hold it on your head, and you carry it on the journey, on your back, on your head, under it all, the burden of it. Or you can put it on the floor and let the train take it. Well, which will you do? It's the same thing. The destiny is the same. The train will end up in the same place. Simply a matter of how much are you going to enjoy your trip if you have a luggage strapped to your back? How much are you going to enjoy the trip if you're hanging on to your log and fluttering your feet? And if you say, oh, yes, this is manly. This is wonderful, all of this activity of kicking my feet and moving my arms, and this is very important, important. Look what I'm doing. And all the time you're doing nothing. The illusion that you are doing something. Simply illusion. Do you see? Is that clear?
Yes.
It's just simply the illusion that you are in control of all of this business. And it's paradoxical because to a certain extent, yes, indeed, your will controls. Why? Because you can talk God into having you do something? No. But because it is already ordained. The divine says, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. And maybe somewhere you'll knock your head hard enough that you'll wake up. You know, the log goes down, you start to drown. Maybe that moment you'll say, oh, well, maybe I'll just let go. Maybe it will happen. Maybe as you're about to die, it will happen. Maybe as you are moving into extremities of disaster, it will happen. Maybe somehow you will begin to get the sense of things in those moments of extremity. But so much of it is remote control. You propel your feet, you move your arms, and you go. You go, always looking ahead. So the log has to sink once in a while in the hope that maybe you'll wake up. So let it sink. You see, my very unsympathetic point of view, let it sink.
The next question has to do with healing. In the case where you are attempting to help someone who has not given you permission.
All right. Now, there are many different ideas on the human plane about this, and I will simply give you my feelings about it. First of all, if someone is receptive to healing, what we are really saying is that that person is aware that they themselves, at that moment, are in a state of negative energy field for whatever reason. And what is needful to tip the balance in their favor and make them feel in a healthier state of mind or of body or of soul, whichever they choose, is to have an influx of the light in order to bring the balance into harmony. Now, if a person is that wise and has that kind of awareness, then what they would do is ask everyone, please, only hold the highest thought. Don't think for one moment about my illness, please. Just think about me as a healthy, totally whole, dynamic, creative person. That is what they would say. Now, that kind of a person is going to receive help from all sources. The one thing that I would like to say over and over is, with all due respect to the human capabilities to heal, that is not always maximum. You do not have to rely on other human beings thinking healthy thoughts for you to heal you. You do not have to do that. Understand, this game is not rigged in favor of the most popular person on the block. The divine does not care who is the most popular person on the block. Do you see? And the most unhappy, the most despicable person on the block is as capable and as has as much access to healing and freeing life as does the most righteous, the most wonderful, the most helpful person on the same block. Do you see? It is not limited to your physical understanding. And this is something that I think the humans are very arrogant about, if I might say so. If you say that someone has to have the help of another human being, I say this is absolutely a validation of your perception of separation. You were saying, without another separated entity, I cannot do this and that. And I say, nonsense. The divine wisdom moves at all times and in all places for everyone. The sun shines on the just and the unjust. Is this a quote? All right? The divine energy is there for everyone. You do not have to qualify on some popularity board or some virtue board in order to be accessible to divine energy, health, and wisdom. You do not. In fact, in my experience, those of you in this world who have had despicable experiences are far more likely to turn deeply to the vast power and not rely on humans because you have learned of the unreliability of human beings and their on-again, off-again perceptions of they like you and now they don't. Today they like you, tomorrow they don't. Today you please them, tomorrow you don't. All of these things, if you're paying close attention, somebody who is very well loved and very, very popular on the earth plane is usually someone who is very good at adjusting and adapting. And today they have face A for you and tomorrow face B, and they can continue to pay attention to what you want and they will fill you with whatever it is you want and then you will like them. Do you understand? This is the way that works. And I say, fine, no objection. But please do not be so arrogant as to think that healing has to come through another physical vehicle. In fact, my dear friend, if you want to know my honest perception of it, it is the opposite. That those who call on the rare, raw, alive, dynamic heat of divine energy directly stand a much better chance of full health than they do when they call on others to be part of it. Because no matter how much another person wants to be pure and aligned and non-involved, they are involved. Do you understand? When that energy has to move through another person, it gets tainted. It does get tainted because that person has their own preconceptions of who they are healing.
And the main thing they think is, I am the healer and you are the one to be healed. And that is an inferior, you see, already we have inferior, superior positions. And from that kind of perception, you do not get the taste of the tremendous equality that divine wisdom gives. And this is my one complaint about healing on the human plane. People say, oh, it is not me, it's not me. But inside themselves, they do not honestly believe that. There is a part of them that says, it is me. It is me. Unless they are free, there's that is still there. And I'm not arguing that point. I'm not saying that this is a negative aspect. I'm simply saying, let us be honest. It is there. And so if you really wish to help someone, to heal someone, then you, if possible, should just bring before them the possibility of being their own healer. By that I simply mean by having them be the ones who open their own being to the divine light and seeing themselves as healthy. Months and months, if not years ago, I said, if you want to keep healthy, there's one exercise I would recommend for you every day, and very few people do it. And it is so simple. It is once a day, for at least 10 minutes, to see yourself absolutely inundated with nothing but light and wisdom and power and health and dynamic living. Do you understand? And see yourself like that. Not as some kind of an arrogant, pompous god walking the earth, but just feel yourself a part of the wholeness and the health that is life. And see yourself that way. And see all that you love that way and all that you hate that way. Just spend a little bit of time seeing that, holding that view of yourself and all that are around you. And in the end, mind builds. Mind builds the reality. And that is what you build. That is what you build. If you want that, that is far better than any life insurance policy you might take out. I would recommend it. Because your mind then builds this view of yourself and all others with this dynamic life flowing through without obstacle of any kind, mental, physical, spiritual, whatever. So if you wish to really help, that is my key, is take yourself out of the picture and say, you know, you could do this directly. All right, let us say that is not possible. Some people say, pshaw, not. That's all garbage. All right. So what then is left for you? You can continue to see them as healthy, totally whole, alive, dynamic, and let it go. And let it go. That is one option. Another option is to mind your own business. And so you must decide. It's simply a matter of choice. Decide. I think the second part of the question is very good. Would you bring that forward, please?
Yes. She also asked, what is meant by service when in some cases the person receiving the service might have turned within had he or she not received it?
Well, first of all, the answer to that is you are not there to judge those kinds of things. You simply have to do your best intuitive workings and then allow the energy to move and to live as it will. All right? You cannot say, oh, that person is starving, but I will not feed it because perhaps if that person starts to starve to death on the brink, reality and freedom will burst into their consciousness. That isn't the answer. The answer is, someone is starving. What is your response? My response is, I want to help. You go, you take them in your arms, you say, can I feed you? And they say, thank you. And you begin to feed them. And then you finish it. You finished it, you put the down, you move. Finished. It's not your decision to say, should this, does that, the other happen. It isn't in your power anyway. So just allow it. Do what is necessary. Do what is the momentary, wondrous, natural and spontaneous action, and then forget about it. Don't look back to see if they're healed. Don't look back to see if their eyes are sparkling. Allow it. Finished. Do what is there to do and walk away. Finished. And so if you feel motivated to do some healing for someone, if someone has said, well, I would like you to do it. But don't be concerned about whether it works or doesn't work or stands on its head. Just do it. Do it.
Or don't
do it. If you go within and you say, no, that doesn't feel right to me, that's all you need to say. How do you know? If you want to keep a chalkboard of whether you're successful or not successful, my goodness, how are you going to make that assessment? You don't have the powers of that perception. You simply go back to what you have. What do you have? Your own intuitive wisdom. What does it say? Does it say go and help? Then you go and help. You see a child struggling with something. oftentimes you rush in and try and help, and the child turns away because now you've taken the fun out of the game, all right? And if you're paying attention, you'll know. But then there's another time that child needs you badly, and a little word here will make all the difference. So you go and you give the little word, and the child says, thank you, and goes on with it, you see. And then you forget about it. You don't worry. You do exactly what is intuitive within you. If you set yourselves up at some kinds of judge and jury as to what you should do, you are hopelessly lost. Because, first of all, where is your attention when you're making such a judgment? Where is your awareness? If I am concerned about you, where is my awareness? My awareness is no longer here. And this is the only point at which I can touch on divine wisdom. Not there, here. And if I am concerned about that entity and not paying attention to what is moving within my being and then flows out and connects with this entity, you understand the difference? From this perception of centeredness within my being, I move as a part of a natural spontaneous movement out, and then the connection tells me this body in relationship to this body, and spontaneously wisdom arises. This is the action that needs to be taken at this time, and I do it, and then I drop it. Then there is a possibility of real healing, real help, real understanding to take place. But if I move out of my own physical being and go over to his and try and work with that out of his center, I have not access to his center. That is not my prerogative. My center is my business. His center is his. And he has the rights of his own center. That isn't my job. And so if you stay closely within your own being and hold that person in your mind and ask, how? Ask how. Okay. How? Meaning how to serve. And then just sense the oneness that surrounds with the energy field of these two entities, and spontaneously something arises, and then you do it. And then you drop it. You don't look back to say, oh, I wonder if it worked. I wonder if he's grateful. Oh, this is another good one. I wonder if he's grateful. Does he know what I've done? Oh, we'll make sure he knows what I've done. What I'll do is I'll go say, well, what I did, was it all right? Did it help you? What is this? What is that subtly? What are we doing subtly when we say these things? We're saying, oh, please know that I'm working on your behalf. Please know I'm trying to help you. What is this? What is this? And then how does the other feel? You want the other to feel gratitude, do they? Or do they instead feel helpless? Helpless. Oh, I can't function alone. I have to have others to help me. That loneliness, the feeling that you are dependent on other humans. Do you know, that is a lonely feeling in my perception. To feel so strongly within you that you must depend on other people. That is lonely, because then you are at their mercy. Then you must please them. Then you cannot ever say what you wish and be what you want, because you have to please. Why? Not because you want to please, but because you don't want to be abandoned, because somehow you feel if you are abandoned, you will be awash in the world and helpless. This is not the true perception. But these are the things that we always try to do. You know, we undermine, and we undermine the strength of the other person. When we say, I have helped you, we are saying, without my help, you could not have done it. And this appears to be a gift, my friend. It is diabolical. Because what you're saying is, look how important I am, and look how helpless you are without me. Please, never do that to your friends, to your children, to your mate, to anyone.
Sometimes we ask, is that okay? For the reason it helps you later on in another's response.
I understand that, and that is valid. Again, my dear friend, we go back to the point. What is your motive? And if you are very closely within your being, you will sense. If you sense, oh dear, I have to go and find out how, check it out with the other, find out how am I doing from my ego's point of view, you will know that. Or if you say, I need to know if that was a valid help or whether it was a hindrance. And then you say, you put it out there. Well, was it any good, or is it useless? And that's valid. You see, what is the motive? If the motive is to entrap the other person into looking at you as their helper, which people don't really like to see themselves that way, if that is the motive, then you will know it. If you're very closely aware of your own motivation, you will know. And if in the moment it feels correct to ask, and because the motive is strong and good, then do it. Again, trust your own motivation. Trust it. I'm not saying you should never do this you must do that. I'm saying be so within your own awareness that the motive of your action is crystal clear. And then decide whether to do it or not. And if you want to do it, even though you know it's arrogantly egotistical, do it. So what? I don't care, as long as you are there with it. As long as you know what you're doing. As long as you're laughing at yourself, hopefully. Hopefully part of you is laughing and saying, oh, look at what I'm trying to do. That's all right with me. The only thing that is not all right with me is to be asleep. By asleep, I mean absolutely unattached to your motives. Unthinking. Unresponsive.
The problem, one of the problems with trying to assess an action in terms of the results has to do with the fact that causal chains go on indefinitely. And there's a story that brings that out. The Dallas farmer's horse leaves the corral, and the neighbor comes over and says, how unfortunate. The farmer says, how am I to know if it's good or bad? The next day, the horse comes back with 10 wild horses and brings them into the corral. The neighbor says, how fortunate. The farmer replies, how am I to know if it's good or bad? The third day, the farmer's son decides to tame one of the wild horses and is thrown off and breaks a leg. And the neighbor says, how unfortunate. And when the horses come back, the neighbor says, how fortunate. The son breaks his leg. How unfortunate. The farmer says, how am I to know what's good or bad? The next day, a representative from the emperor's army comes by to enlist the services of the son, but the son has a broken leg, so he's exempted from service. And the neighbor says, how fortunate. And the farmer says, how am I to know what's good or bad? So that if you're trying to evaluate any given thing from its consequences, you'll never know, because one thing just leads to another and another and another and another.
That's an excellent, that's an excellent fable, and it stands. It is true. And you see, the problem with a human is that they keep trying to make these assessments, and they are making assessments on insufficient data. It is because your perception is so limited to time-space that you cannot see the vaster vision, and therefore you have no capabilities of real judgment. You cannot judge. And this is why I say it is a paltry and feeble attempt. And at best, it gives you the illusion of power. An illusion of power. An illusion of power over someone else, for example, by judging their actions right or wrong. And my friend, if you're being very honest with yourself, when you try and judge another's actions right or wrong, all you're trying to do is take attention off of your own foibles. That's all you're trying to do. You're just paying attention over there so that you don't have to pay attention here. It is the greatest ongoing diversion that the human has ever created, which is, let's pay attention to other people, and therefore I don't have to pay attention to myself. I can look at others and make all kinds of wonderful judgments, good and bad, and in all this process, where am I? Well, I'm not here. And if I'm not here, I don't have to look. And if I don't have to look, I don't have to see. I can just stay asleep, and isn't that wonderful? And that's all it is, my friend. That's all it is. Seeing in its rawest, most simple form, that's all it is. You can put it as gloriously high as you want, but I say to you, it is so utterly simple. You are just trying to take the pressure off of your own self because you don't want to look. And this is what judgment is all about. Other people looking at events, judging events good or bad. This is why I say, don't worry about the future events. How do you know, as this gentleman farmer, who is to say what is good or bad? So terrible destruction happens, if it should. I'm not making any predictions at all. I'm just simply saying this is one of the terrors that is now awash in the land, the fear of great and terrifying changes. Who is to say if they're good or bad? Who is to say? What if through all of that, awakenings happen by the millions? Then who will say what is good or bad? And what if slumbering on for the next 1,000 years was to bring no freedom? Who is to say what is good or bad? You cannot say. You either trust or you don't trust. And if you trust life, I say again and again and again, my friend, trust life. It can be trusted. It is dependent. It is dependable. Life is dependable. Something that is so easy and yet so far from the reason most people. Because they have the illusion again that they're kicking the little log. Trust that which is upholding you, which is the vast bosom of the sea. Trust it. Trust it. And give up the illusion of the log and the frantic attempt to paddle around here and there. Allow the movement of that sea to take you to your destiny. It will. Believe me. And although the frantic little flutters of your feet will not change it one iota, it will not. But how are you enjoying the trip? How are you enjoying the trip? If you feel an individual need to kick your feet and paddle, then do so. But you will exhaust yourself eventually. And your log will sink eventually. It is the divine will that it be so. It will sink. And then you'll have to make up another one, which is another body. Do you understand what I mean? The log is the physical form that you go through life with. It will dissolve and go back into the sea. Slowly the sea eats and claims its own. And slowly the divine permeates that log and fills it until it is so filled with the divine that it once again sinks into the depths of the divine sea. And then you must conjure up another one.
You proved that at the analogy of Romano, the salt doll diving into the
sea. Ah, yes. I recall. Yes. Same thing. And eventually, the sea claims its own. And that log goes and is part of the bosom of the sea. But you create a new one, bright, shining, new. And then as the years go on, it gets waterlogged, and the divine permeates it again, and the drama goes on and on. What are you identifying with? It's the only problem. With the log, and the frantic movements, kicking, kicking, pushing, tiring, needing this, needing that. All illusion. The sea upholds you. There's nothing to do and nowhere to go. It's all an illusion. But play it if you will. But be grateful. Be grateful that the divine is the source upon which you lie and which carries you unerringly to the souls that are necessary for your understanding. It is truth. Do what you will. You are God. There's nothing you can do. You belong to him. There's nothing else you can ever be or could ever be. And be grateful. And be grateful. And the end comes and you see glowingly, lovingly, totally. Are there other questions?
I think that's it.
No, I thank you all.
Thank you, Bert Holland.
By fear that you are propelled into this quick decision.
I'm not for or against any of these things. I'm simply saying you must be aware of the psychological situation surrounding it. You must be aware that it is not something that you simply do and then forget and it goes out of your life, like buying a new car and then getting rid of a new car. It isn't that simple. And people who are simplistic, if I might use that word, in their approach to this, I think are foolish, because they end up with a definite amount of difficulty that they then have to face. You must understand that you view yourself from that point forward, you view yourself in a different way. You are no longer able to side completely and totally with the good, the true, and the beautiful, no matter how you would like to convince yourself others, you see. Your mind puts yourself in a different category than you were before that event. And because it is expedient, you put it below the surface. Those of you who are men and who join into this and aid the decision are also partly to stand responsible for those decisions. It isn't something that you can just say, well, it's the woman's problem and it has nothing to do with me and I just place it in her hands and let her do with it what she will. These are things that are jointly conceived and have to be dealt with accordingly. Now, people say, well, what good is it if the child comes into the world and it has no love and this and that and goes through adoption and foster parents, whatever the situation. That is not really your place to judge. None of you are capable of deciding what the destiny of an incarnate is going to be. You simply do your best. You simply make your choice. You decide whether you can bring this into fruition, into the life form, or whether you cannot. And if you cannot do so, then you must face deeply within yourself the responsibility of carrying the problem. If the life that you had chosen absolutely rules out such a possibility, or if the physical welfare of the mother is such that it rules it out, or if it is known that the child is going to be in a state of deformity, these are different situations. But to simply move into sexual relationships without any concern for what is going to be the issue of these things, and then just casually assuming that one can just take the life in order to take care of the problem, is extremely selfish. And this is a selfish approach to things, and I'm not in favor of selfish approaches. I think that in the end, you end up being regretful. I must say again and again, I am not against abortion. I am against unthinking, unmotivated, deeply thought through actions. And this is definitely the way many of the people on the earth plane are responding in this day to this particular problem. Instead of changing their habits, their sexual habits, instead of taking the chance on destroying their own body by taking pills and so forth, they choose to destroy a life. You see, this is a very selfish response. No adult enters into a sexual relationship without knowing, unless tremendous precautions are taken, the issue is going to be a child unless they're very careful. And if they fail to take this care, then they must be responsible for the issue that takes place. Just as you're responsible for the words that come out of your mouth, so are you responsible for the life force that moves through your body. You're not standing at something irresponsible, you see. You cannot say, well, I can always take care of this through killing it. You see, it is not something that is so easily done. So my question always is, as in all things, the end is in the beginning. And if you understand this deeply, as a very deep spiritual understanding, then before you begin things, you will be very deeply aware of the end that might result, and therefore you are very careful. And you take care in the beginning so that the end will not contain in it a seed of destruction. You see, if it's as in your words, in the beginning, and they are out, and then the destruction arises, well, you cannot say that the end, the destruction, is somehow not connected with the beginning. If the feelings that generated the first speech were destructive, then the end is going to be. If the actions in sexual relationships are casual and unthinking and uncaring and not motivated by the deepest desires, then so will the end. You see, in the beginning is the end. So one has to be responsible all the way through, not in some kind of heavy-handed, despondent perception, but deeply aware that all of this must be taken as an important moment in one's life. And that if the desire is simply for physical pleasure to be released, then is this a responsible act? Is it responsible? And do you stand as responsible human beings for what happens? But once again, there are always certain cases that it is absolutely necessary. This is understood. You know, when women are of a certain age, it is no longer healthy that they have children, the children and so on. All of this is all very true. Certain formations within the physical being of the child mean that it will be a very definite physical difficulty. Most of these happen. There are always cases in very young girls, so on. You know, there are exceptions. And in those cases, the reason rides clear and strong and says this to be the normal action. That is not my point. My point is, and I think this is the thrust of the question, the abortion movement within the world today is such that it is so vast and sweeping that it is just another sign of lack of responsibility of one's actions. The only thing that matters is your physical pleasure. What results from it does not matter. I would ask you to give serious thought to this. Is this a very responsible way to live your life? Or is it simply another sign of one's desire to fulfill their immediate needs and not be concerned about the outcome? So this is all I would like to say on it. There is no black and white. There is no absolute no and absolute yes. There are gray areas, and it is, again, no rule of virtue can rule here. It has to come in the beginning every time you enter into your sexual relationship. What is there? What is the responsibility? What are you calling up? What are you doing it for? And if you're doing it for the physical pleasure, then be very sure that you have taken precautions so that you will not bring an unwanted child into your womb and therefore have this responsibility to deal with it. Be responsible before, not partway through. You know, it's the one act that you have to be responsible at the beginning, or else you will have a tremendous amount of responsibility, either in years and years to come in raising the child, or in the time of having to make the decisions of adoption or abortion or whatever they are.
Again, it's not what you do so much as how you do it, what your attitude is.
In the totality, in the beginning, you see so many people. Remember, I've spoken before about the somnambulistic approach people have to their desires. You know, they have a sexual desire, they decide they have this one that they're going to have this relationship with, and they throw themselves into it, and it is the immediacy of the thing that permeates their mind structure, nothing else. Right now, I want this person, physically, and I shall have it. The next step is not taken. What is the motive in that moment? If the motive is purely sensual, I'm not against purely sensual motives. I'm not against anything. But I say, are you aware of that? Are you aware that this is what is going on? And if you are, then please make sure that you're taking precautions to make sure that that is all that you're going to be resulting of. Do you understand? It's a matter of where are your awareness perceptions at that moment. And if you don't mind just having a physical relationship with no encumbrances, I don't mind. This is not my business. I'm simply saying, I think that humans have to pull back and be responsible in the moment of their overwhelming desires. It's very easy for an alcoholic, for example, who gets in a car and goes down and destroys a life. He says, well, I didn't mean to hit the car. I didn't mean to hit that person. I didn't mean it. But you see, if they had been paying attention, they would have realized at the beginning of that day, when they began their drinking pattern, when they began to imbibe or take the drug or whatever it was that they were doing, if they would have only gone a little past that and asked the responsibility that they were undertaking before they got into the vehicles and moved down the highway, there's always that option of disaster. Everyone knows that, but people abandon. Remember, I've spoken before, they abandon the field because they don't want to think about that. They just want to have their central desires satisfied, whatever that might be. So yes, it's the motive, and it's the motive in the beginning. If this is so difficult because humans do not like to be aware of this very basic fact. In the beginning is the end. In the beginning is the end. And if you can once understand that, what I mean, so totally, then you will understand why I keep pleading for awareness in the moment. Because in each moment, there is an ending already coming into its own. And you, as you begin one thing, are moving very definitely into a future point. You are. It is simply where your awareness is. And therefore, those people who try to safeguard the future, the best safeguard for the future is total awareness in the present. If you're totally aware in the present, being aware of your motives, casting out that which you don't really want as an end result, and staying very close closely with those things that you do, what you will find is that your life takes on a different hue because you're not futurely oriented. You're living now for the most maximum awareness in the moment, and the future takes care of itself. Do you see? Do you understand? The future takes care of itself in its own way. You don't worry about the future. You just stay quietly centered and totally aware in the present, and the future will take care of itself. What is the motive in this moment? What is it? I'm not against sensual relief. I'm not against sexual relationships. Not against any of those things. But I am totally against going through the mall asleep. Because then you will not be there. Then you will not have the perception that makes maximum your future. Because it's here. This is where you make your future maximum. Right here. No other time. And it will be maximum if you can hold to the center and go with the deep awareness that unfolds mind, minute by minute within your own being. And the future is taken care of.
This is connected with your statement that nothing is distorted.
Exactly. Exactly. It must be this. And if you are not responsible in the beginning, irresponsibility and actions of irresponsible nature are the result. It has to be thus. You cannot act irresponsibly and have responsibility be the result. You, what, as you give, so you receive. What you give out is what returns. Where your awareness stands, that is what returns. And if it's a disparate energy moving here and there with this desire and that desire and so on, we end in the same confusion.
Is there a principle that if one is not paying attention to the situation at its outset, and continues to be somnambulistic about a course of action, that the phenomenon becomes stronger and stronger and more apparent and more apparent and more apparent until at last one must pay attention to it? Is that some kind of a principle?
Well, the old story, you know, they hit you with a stick and then a 2x4 and then they let the house fall on you. Yes, this is your higher self and not some demonic power outside of your own awareness pushing you into various things. Understand this. No one takes physical life without part of their higher self doing its maximum to bring you to whatever maximum.